Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for listening to 89.1 FM Lakeshore Public Radio and online streaming wherever you may be at lakeshorepublicradio.org. I'm Tom Lounges, your host for Midwest Beat. This is a program all about music, the arts, and the people who make it. My first hour guest is Patty Schaffner. She's a region local that has been in the art scene for many, many years, doing a variety of musical projects and other things. One of those other things is spoken word. We've got a brand new album out, Schaffner, Sarver, and Cowan, Messages for the Heart. It's a spoken word to music, and we're going to get to that as well as feature a few songs from Patty over the years. It's all coming up after your headlines right here on Lakeshore. Keep it on 89.1. Good afternoon, Tom Lounges here. It's time for Midwest Beat on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thank you for providing a format for us here to bring you some interesting things. Today's show is definitely going to be interesting. We have spoken word. I don't think I've done a program on spoken word per se, and we're going to do a full hour based on a brand new album called Messages for the Heart. Schaffner, Sarver, and Cowan. And in studio with me is Patty Schaffner. She has been on the scene here in Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland for a number of years. Vocalist, songwriter, coach, mentor, and now spoken word artist. We're going to get to some of the spoken word in just a minute. But first, let's take you back in time to a previous album. This one goes back to 2007. And it's the album Everything Changes Again, and we've been going through a lot of change this year, so it's an apt album to play. It's kind of a fun little ditty. It's called I Don't Do Country. We're going to play some music, then we're going to get into some spoken word, and we're going to find out the stories behind these amazing pieces of work. It's all coming up after this song.
Folks could sing along, the kind of song that they might buy down in Nashville, Tennessee. The kind of song that Garth might sing, thank all the honey it would bring, and that would be just fine for me. But I don't do country, and can't you see me? Sequence sweater, I could be the next Loretta, maybe fair. show. I'd be making so much dough. I'd buy the Country Hall of Fame. I'd buy half the state of Texas, where I could hide out from all my exes. And I'd have Willie do my taxes. But I don't.
She don't do country, but she does everything else. That's going back to 2007. What a great album. Everything Changes Again. And the sidemen on this. Anyone in Northwest Indiana knows names like Marco Villarreal, Bill Romer, Scott Pizzera, Rick Watson, John Dorado, Waz, doing something that I didn't know he did. He played flute on this album, and I thought he was just a piano man, and so many others on here. You've got a new project. It's spoken word. Is this your first time doing spoken word?
It is indeed.
Because you do a very good job, and I'll tell you why I think that in a minute. But you mentioned off air while this was playing that you are working on a new musical album as well.
I am as well. Yes.
Okay.
Singer-songwriter style, you know, my own tunes. Although I am going to be covering a Ken Yeats tune.
Okay. Well, you wrote that song we just played.
I did.
You write almost all your own stuff.
It's true. I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your style has a very folky, very Americana, I guess is the correct term now. Is the new album going to be the same? When you say singer-songwriter, are we talking more like a Carole King, Jackson Browne, or more of like a Bonnie Kolek, Melanie Safka?
I'd say it'd be more like Bonnie.
Okay.
Yeah.
What a talent she is.
Somewhere in that rawness of being able to be very present with the music instead of a lot of production behind it.
Okay.
Actually, John Carpenter from Thunderclap is going to be working with me on that, as well as Jeff Sarver again.
Jeff is an amazing talent. He's been on the show many times. I've had the pleasure of working with him many times. He's another one of those guys. We were talking about like Marco Villarreal being able to play all these different styles. Jeff is one of those guys that can just pluck something out of the air and make it sound so amazing. He's a great player, a great verbiage guy. I mean, his mastery of the language is something else.
It's true. And actually, it was Jeff who was behind this project.
Okay.
In a way, because he had worked with David, my husband, to have him come in and do some tracking. And he rediscovered, or I should say, found these again when he was going through files after David had died and came to me and said, hey, I really think maybe we should do something with this and we should make it a tribute to David.
So David was writing with Jeff?
He was laying down tracks. He was laying down
for
bass.
For his own album?
For an album, no, that Jeff was going to be working with.
Okay.
Jeff just wanted him to come in. From time to time, David would go in and either play percussion or play bass with Jeff on an occasional gig. And so when Jeff was down with an injury, he asked David to come in and do some tracking for him. So he tracked drums and percussion and this overtone flute and bass. And Jeff had found these files and said, we've got to do something. There's all kinds of stuff here. We've got to do something.
Well, good for Jeff, because this stuff is really pretty tasty. I got into spoken word. I was working at Woodmar Records at the time, and a friend of mine that worked there turned me on to Ken Nordine.
Oh, yeah.
When I listened to Ken Nordine do What Time Is It? I lost my mind. I really did. I thought, where have I been all these years? And I went back and I bought different pieces of word jazz that he had done. I started getting into Jack Kerouac and Ginsberg and all the spoken word artists of the 60s and the 70s. And it just amazed me.
Bukowski.
Yeah. He just has a new, he's gone, but he has a new album out. But anyway, the spoken word stuff really spoke to me, if you'll pardon the pun. And when Jeff actually came in here last, I think it was last time he was in, talking about wanting to do a spoken word. And he had talked about some things he had written. And then when I got this from you, I thought this was that project, but it's a different project altogether. So perhaps Jeff is still working on his. I don't know, but this is amazing. And tell us about David.
So David was a nurse. He actually worked in hospice and home care, and he became, for lack of a better term, he became a healer. He became a body worker of really extraordinary skill. He also studied Qigong, which for those people who are going, what is Qigong? If you think Tai Chi, but really slow and with the intention.
Tai Chi is pretty slow.
Yeah, this is even slower. It's meant to really build your own energy, and the form that he taught was a medical form.
Okay.
So he did that. He was a writer, and which most of, not most, but many of the tracks from this album are things that David wrote. He was an artist. He carved bone and jade. He was a musician, and if it had strings or you could make percussion on it, he was talented on it.
Well, and he played the flute on this as well.
And he played this overtone flute, which is he made out of PVC pipe. He actually could play a didgeridoo. He was the only person I know who could actually circular breathe.
I think Johnny Mathis can do that.
Yeah.
I think he's the only other one I've ever heard of that can do that, where you can you know, just hold notes forever and do all, because you're breathing as you're exuding or exhaling.
Yes.
It's a crazy physical process. I don't understand how it could even work, but people can do it, and clearly David could do it. How long were you with David?
We were just shy of 30 years.
Wow.
He passed away in May of 2019. In August, it would have been 30 years that we had been together.
Was it music that brought you together, the arts?
It was indeed, actually. I was hosting the open mic at the Court Restaurant in Valparaiso on a regular basis, and he had met John Dorado before he met me and saw me one night and said, "Hey, John, who's that? I want to meet her." So.
And that was it.
That was it, you know. I handed him my card, and he called me, so.
Were you creative partners then for a while before it became personal?
No. It started out as a romantic relationship.
And just later led to the arts.
Later it was the music, but he was also, he used to play the circuit at Holly's when he was younger. So
okay.
We both had done that whole Holly's, let's go Friday, Saturday, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday,
right?
Often, and you know, get up and be the singer-songwriter.
Wow, there's a couple of tracks in here that really stand out. We were talking about "My Wish for You," which opens is a strong, powerful piece. I like "Stuck" because, being a vinyl guy myself, that's a great one about a record being stuck in this, you know, scenario of life. But I'd like to do "In Shock" as our first one to introduce our listeners to, and. The stories in here, I'm assuming, are all true.
Absolutely.
That David went through.
Yes, yes.
Near-death experiences, surviving those and realizing that that makes you a stronger, better person, reinvents who you are, better perspective, per se.
Yes, actually, after he had his first heart attack in 2012, that was when he really began writing and putting those down, and actually has a book that he had created. And so these pieces are from his book.
So like a book of verse?
They're more like daily inspirational thoughts, you know, about self-forgiveness, about moving into your life with a little more awareness. And so it was 365 days of posts that he had from his blog. He had a blog on Facebook with over 9,000 followers.
He does mention that, and I forget what track it is on here. He's talking about how he would create it, sometimes long, sometimes short, put a piece of artwork on there, and then later go back and edit it. But it was just the freeform thought he would just spill on the page.
Exactly. And that's what happened, and that's how that got put together. And enough people liked what he did that he had, like I said, 9,000 followers from around the world going, "Oh, what's Paca Dave got to say today?"
When I heard him talking about that through his words here, I thought, What a brave soul. I mean, to literally throw everything that's coming out of your head onto paper for the world to see. You're literally standing naked in front of the world with every thought that you could be a target for or be embraced for. It's unnerving. You know, I mean, I couldn't do that.
Well, I think that was part of his healing, you know, in the last 7 years of his life, mm-hmm. was to heal all of the regrets from his life to that point, and all of those things that he saw as a way to give himself in a sense of peace.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, wow. I think that's reflected in this album as well.
Well, this is kind of the track that started that journey, some near-death experiences, and on the other end, he comes out a different Dave. So let's play this. This is off the brand new album, which is now out, correct?
It is.
And you can get it on your website, which is Jazz
Dakini.
Jazz Dakini, DAKINI.com. And this is Schaffner, Sarver, and Cowan. Messages for the Heart and a track called In Shock.
When I was 28, I was injured in a head-on car crash. I knocked out the windshield of my car with my head. I have a very hard head. It all happened so fast, I didn't see it coming. Wham! The right side of my face was full of safety glass. So much blood. I thought I would die. I staggered out of my car to see if the other driver was okay. Yes. He wasn't leaking like I was. Just shaken up, confused, and drunk. His steering wheel was folded in half. He didn't see it coming either, I suppose. The thing I remember most vividly is that I never lost consciousness. In fact, I was hyper-aware, terrified and going into shock. I told jokes to the paramedics all the way to the ER to stay awake. A stream of words. It was instinctive. I was afraid to close my eyes. Afraid to calm down. Too much adrenaline. I was vibrating all over my body. Electrified. I felt absolutely no pain. Heart racing, like being shocked. This was my first near-death experience. I almost wasn't anymore. It is still so clear in my mind. Equally clear is the moment 6 months later when my shock finally lifted and I suddenly realized, wow, I've been in shock this whole time. This whole time. Why didn't anybody tell me? The next near-death experience was far less dramatic. I got stuck for a moment on the railroad tracks with the crossbuck coming down behind me and a car that could not pull forward blocking me in. And an Amtrak train bearing down on me at 80 miles per hour. It was just a brief moment of terror. Is this it? Then the driver moved up. I drove quickly off the tracks and into the gravel, my heart racing. And the train passed. I drove away in shock, completely unharmed. I was almost killed by a train. I was almost killed by a train. Oh my God, I was almost killed by a train. A voice inside me said, "Calm down, Dave. Almost killed by a train means that you were not killed by a train. You're okay. Just relax." I thought about how on any day unexpectedly my life could end. It freaked me out, intellectually and viscerally. At age 54, I suffered a silent heart attack while vacationing in Hawaii on Big Island. As the chest pain was crushing me out, and as we were racing toward the local ER in Waimea, those memories came back to me. Well, the voice inside of me said, "If this is it, Dave, then this is it. Nothing to do about it. You just have to relax. Panicking is the last thing you should do." This time in the ER, they gave me morphine. I completely lost consciousness. As I was going out, I was thinking quietly, "Well, if this is it, I guess this is it." And then, "Hello, darkness." I was gone, like flowing down a dark drain. I woke up a day later in the cath lab at Queen's Hospital in Honolulu as the doctor was pulling this impossibly long wire out of my right wrist. Then I was sent to the cardiac wing of Queen's with a single stent. all wired up, IV drip, stunned, mortified, in shock. Wow, I almost got hit by a train.
Wow, could have got hit by a train. Almost got hit by a train. Almost got hit by a train.
You almost got hit by a train.
That phrase right there could apply to so many scenarios in one's life.
Amen. You know,
could have been, should have been, might have been, but it didn't happen.
Right.
And you came out on the other side, and you are more aware, maybe a better person, better strength, more focused, knowing that it could have happened. So therefore, maybe it could happen again, and maybe you won't escape it. So let's focus on making every day count, every minute count.
Absolutely.
The message in that, if for nothing else, if you just release that track, the message is super strong and super important. And I think it's especially important in today's world where everything's going kind of crazy, that we have to make every day count. Because we don't even know if the world's going to be here tomorrow. You know, you really don't. I mean, with everything going on out here, it's time to just focus within as well as focus without. And I don't want to put you on the spot, but is there a favorite track on here that really speaks to you the most?
About my own experience of grieving David's loss, or my favorite track of David's?
Well, maybe your favorite track of David's for right now, because I think I know the ones where you're talking about grieving David. Evening falls, living in a forest. You put your soul out when you're reading these.
Right, right. So actually, my favorite of David's is My Wish for You.
Okay, which we're going to get to. That is the opening track. With this album, with these 14 tracks of Messages for the Heart, the sequencing, I always try to talk to artists about sequencing, because to me, albums are snapshots, songs are snapshots, and albums are these beautiful word books, I guess, music books that we listen to. I'm not a fan of singles. I don't like when someone says, oh, this is my new single. Give me the album. Tell me the story. Let me feel where you were in that moment of your life. With this kind of thing, every track is a moment of life. Is this chronological, the way he wrote them? Or did you have some kind of artistic freedom in creating a layout that you saw?
It was actually a collaboration between me and Jeff talking about the sequencing, because actually the very first chronologically that he wrote was the When Death Comes For Me, which was from his nursing stories days.
Okay.
When it actually spoke to his own experience. And so we thought about how we wanted to put that in there based on what David's transformation was after his first heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
So the My Wish for You, you know, as he's becoming more aware of the things that he needed to be reflective of in his own life after he had this near-death experience, and then leading up to his nursing story, from like, hey, don't let me go this way,
right?
You know, let me do this, and which is exactly what he got to do, by the way.
Right.
He got it his way. And then after that, then my grieving process, and then throwing in David again as the healer, reminding people that the healer is someone that just kind of holds space for you while you do your own healing.
Okay. Now, you had mentioned you were together almost 30 years.
Yes.
You knew old David. You knew new David. How did the new David affect your life as a human being, as a person, as a woman, as an artist?
The new David was someone who I felt I had a deeper connection with, actually. I mean, we always loved one another. And like all couples, you go through those difficult times. But the new David was somebody who was truly more aware of, hey, it could be today. It could be this moment. So I think maybe I ought to be even more aware of what's around me. And I ought to be really making sure that I'm in service to life and to other people. And so that led us to a deeper connection.
So maybe think twice before you say something snarky or whatever, because you never want that to be the last thing you say. And knowing that it could be any time, because three death experiences back to back that he just talked about there, it makes you think.
Oh, it does. It makes you reflective of, hey, you know what? It's just not worth it to get that excited about that. I could let that go.
Right.
You know, it's not that important for me to hang on to being mad at somebody. What's that doing to me? You know, if somebody does you wrong, how do you approach that? Do you say, well, all right, what can I do to make my own self right with this situation? And that's what David did.
Okay. Interesting words, the way he words things. You mentioned he was a writer. Besides songwriting, what kind of writing did he do, or was that the extent of his writing?
Oh, no, he actually had a blog on Facebook where he had over 9,000 people from around the world who followed him on a daily basis, because after his first heart attack, he began writing every day.
Had he written prior to that? Was he writing some books or magazine articles or anything in that sense? Was he a journalist of some kind?
No, but when he was in nursing school and when he was doing hospice nursing and home care nursing, he actually began to come home, and his way of processing his experience of being the caretaker for people who were in the process of dying or were stuck at home with illnesses, he began to write his nursing stories. And so I actually am in the process of cataloging those now. I used to say, these need to be in a book. They're great. Mm-hmm. They're great because they're snapshots of people's lives. And because he saw more than just the sickness. He saw the person behind it.
So it's kind of a way to purge the pain.
Yes.
And immortalize the patient at the same time. And
absolutely.
Their fight.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
And so he began to do those things, writing in that way. But then he, as I said, he began to blog his own forgiveness process as he was recovering from the first heart attack, and that helped him to again process.
Mm-hmm.
But he found out that, wow, a whole lot of people really resonated with that, and they were saying, wow, you know, more, give me more, give me more. So he put that together into a 365-day book called Messages from the Left Side of My Heart, New Beginnings by Paca Dave. And Paca was what his oldest granddaughter, she couldn't say grandpa, it came out Paca. So that's how he became Paca. And everybody knew him as Paca Dave.
The words he uses, and I can understand why he and Jeff Sarver became so bonded, because Jeff pulls words and uses words like paint. And I'm getting the same feel from what I've listened to so far of David's stuff. There's certain people that can speak and it's music. Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull has that appeal to me. When I interview him, I'm intimidated. And I've known him and interviewed him for years, because to me it's like interviewing Shakespeare. The way the eloquence that it rolls off tongues, the certain words that are used. And when I listen to a Jeff Sarver song, especially off his most recent albums, my mind just gets enveloped with what he's saying. It hits you in a way that maybe a Billy Joel song doesn't, or an Elton John song doesn't. They're all good, but Jeff, it's the words that matter. And here with David, it's the words that matter again.
Mm-hmm.
But the background in this, I do want to touch on the music. There is music on these. As I mentioned off air, I was at a period in time when I was younger, and I was embracing Native American music, a lot of the slight percussion with flutes and things like that. I also got into George Harrison a lot. He was my first concert, and the Eastern sound, everything from Ravi Shankar on over, the ragas, things like that. I had a moment in my life where that really resonated with me. I still appreciate it, but not so much as I used to. The background music, it's subtle, but it would take away from everything that is on this album if it wasn't there.
Right.
How did the music come about to the words? I mean, did you guys listen to the words and say, this kind of music would be good? I know David plays on this.
Right.
So was this project already in the works, or are these old tracks he had done? I was trying to figure that out, because it's a tribute to him, but he was already on it.
So how that happened was when Jeff had an injury and he was unable to play, he brought in a bunch of musicians, including Mike Gallimore and William Day and Ty and Kai, that's all I know them by, from Homewood, Illinois, and David, to be able to lay down tracks that he could then craft around.
Okay.
And so after David died, Jeff was going through the files and discovered that he had all these tracks of David and came to me and said, hey, we've got to do something with this. I don't want to do it without your permission, but I would love to do something in tribute to David. What can we do? And we began to collaborate.
So these were like tracks that were just banked for possible use somewhere.
Yes.
And they lent themselves to these words.
Yes.
In such a beautiful way.
Yes. And so David's words with me reciting them or speaking them over David's music, and then Jeff's subtle putting ocean sounds, for example.
Right.
David was born
and
in Oakland,
thunderstorm
California.
In there. There was
right.
some of that, yeah.
Yeah, the magic that Jeff creates, a beautiful collage out of the what we did.
Did Jeff produce these tracks then?
Yes.
Okay.
He actually did, and then we had it mastered at Thunderclap with John. Yeah.
Wow. This how long did it take to actually from when Jeff approached and said, I'd like to do this, to the finished product?
We started in November of last year, so a year ago, and then we released the album in July, and I released it digitally, and then we created physical CDs after that.
So it really wasn't a long process.
Not really, because the material was pretty much already there. I had, much like David, after he died, I began to blog on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a blog on Facebook as well that is called Wisecracks Blog, and that allows me to do what David did and to process my own moving through his loss and moving back into my life.
Now, is your blog also on your webpage?
I don't think. Well, yeah, actually, I think maybe down at the very bottom of the menus, I think it may say Wisecracks.
Oh, yep, there it is. There it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Coaching and workshops, video. So how often are you on the website? How often is this updated?
I try to update it at least every 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay. And again, it's Jazz Dakini, DAKINI.com, jazzdakini.com. For everything related to Patty and her projects. When you're coaching or mentoring, tell me about that phase of your career.
That's actually a more recent phase.
Okay.
And that came out of my experiences with the Acorn Theater up in Three Oaks, Michigan, where the executive director, Sandra Thompson, said, people over the years have told me that I have great stage presence, but she said, you should teach this. You should teach this, how to do this. And so we developed a class, and I taught my first class actually like 9 days after David died. I taught my first class at the Acorn to 8 students on stage presence and how to deal with stage fright. And
wow.
I find that I really enjoy it. My experiences in musical and dramatic theater, directing and being on stage and having been a performer for a very long time now.
You've been a part of the scene forever.
Yeah, like
when
know,
I was
I mean,
starting out, your name was already there too. So, I mean, a lot of the names on this album, you know, the John Dorados and the Billy Romers, I mean, I was just starting out and that was many decades ago.
Well, let's just say I started in the 80s.
Okay. Very good.
Professionally.
We were talking about one of the things I like, and I'm so glad you did spoken word, and for a first effort, this is remarkable. And you just brought up the fact of stage presence and performing. I mentioned off air that one of the things that struck me with Ken Nordine and also with this is the breaths. The pauses, the pregnant pauses, as they're called, which underscore certain words. It's the kind of the phrasing that made Sinatra so great. You're doing it with spoken word. Ken Nordine is probably the master of that. Did theater make this album possible because of your theater background And was there ever any thought of having anyone else read his words but you?
Well, let me address the last question first.
Okay.
Yes, actually, I had wanted his son to come and read because his voice would have been the closest to David's, and he just felt like he couldn't do it.
Is he a performer as well?
No, he's okay. not, although he does play guitar. As far as did the theater help? Absolutely. I mean, I've had enough experience on stage now to have some sense of that. But also as a vocalist over the years, I understand the importance of space mm-hmm. in music and as you're singing, as you're phrasing. If you really want to give impact to what you're saying, you have to think about it. You have to feel it, and you have to take those pauses in order to be able to properly express what's behind it.
Okay. And a prime example is that last song we listened to where, you know, I almost got hit by a train. There was just enough air there to let you absorb what you had just heard, and then you strike with that one line that makes it all come together.
And I will say that most of this was done in one take.
Wow. That's impressive. I recorded one time. I did a book for the blind when I was just starting out in radio. And it was a short book. And it was a wonderful project to be a part of. But it was one of the most difficult things I've ever done. I thought, how hard is it to read? You know, I'm reading a book aloud. That's it. But when you listen back to it, it's like, I'm not getting it. It's not carrying over. It's, you know, I had to do many takes on it, and it was a short book. And I realized that was not my calling. You know, I can do radio. I can do this. I can do that. I cannot, even if my voice seems suited for it, it just didn't work. And that's a gift unto itself, is the timing. And you've got that down on here, too. So that said, with this under your belt, and obviously David has volumes of stuff left, including the nursing stories, will there be more spoken word albums?
We've actually talked about doing that because there is so much more tracking of mm-hmm. music that's possible there to be able to create a second spoken word piece. And we had recorded a few of them and then cut them from the album as we were making decisions as to how to put this together. So there are a few that have actually been recorded already.
Okay. Let's play another one. Again, I want to definitely get to my wish for you. We will get to that, I promise. Let's do Stuck. This is kind of a fun one. It's comparing life to an album, and vinyl is in again. And we all know that every once in a while you get that little glitch in there, that little piece of dust or that fleck or that slight scratch that makes it skip or makes it stick. And this is Stuck. And we're going to play this. We'll be back in just a moment, and we'll talk some more with Patty.
It keeps going on. You know, I repeat myself. A record stuck. Remember those? Your kid brother ran into the room and bumped the player, so the needle dug in just enough to cause a loop to be played, rather than gliding along the nice, even grooves full of the music you loved, left with a stuck place, playing the same phrase of the song over and over, till you move the needle. It would never be the same again. I will never be the same again. I have to pick up the needle and jump over that gouge so I can hear the rest of the music I love. Live the life I have been spiraling in toward the center, moving to the end of my album. But I like that first part so well. Love the way we sounded together. So I start over again, picking up the needle and playing our tune till I get stuck on May 22nd. And the way the past nearly 8 months go around and around, looping on repeat. Once in a while, I pick up the needle and go on. And you are there, too. But in the background, the bass turned down, but steadily present. And then I see stretched before all the music yet unheard and unsung. landscapes filled with a newness that I have never imagined. And all that beautiful early music we made echoes in themes as the layers of my life unfold. But sometimes I pick up the needle again and go back, till I get stuck on May 22nd. And then, here, as in my day-to-day, I repeat myself. So if the words or the theme or the vision seem familiar, just know that you are watching me get stuck again. And know that I'll remember eventually to pick up and move beyond the damaged spot.
Sometimes life sticks us, and that little scratchy sound, that little pop and click, brilliantly worked into that piece of verse. Was that you? Was that Jeff? I mean,
that
was brilliant.
Jeff. That was Jeff.
Excellent job there, Jeff. To use a scratchy record, to have that stick, to underscore what you're talking about. And then, you know, tell the story about the little brother that bumps the table. We've all had that. Anyone that grew up with records, it's like, what? What'd you do? My favorite album, yeah, my favorite record. Again, powerful stuff, powerful stuff. We were talking off air briefly about the fact that, you know, right now is a horrible time. 250,000 people died already from COVID and COVID-related issues. A lot of people are grieving all across the world, all across the country, all across the region in our counties. And sometimes people don't want to embrace the grief. They want to move on right away. Okay, well, if you don't allow yourself to heal, if you don't allow the grief, if you don't cross the bridge, you can't get to the other side and become the new David or the new Patty or the new Tom or whoever. You have to go through that. And a lot of people deny it. You know, the whole denial of grief, that I'm stronger than that. Okay, it happened. I'll get through it. I'm going to puff my chest out. This album reminds us that grief is an important part of the healing, an important part of living. If you don't grieve, you can't really live on. And you're now at, what, a year and a half?
Year and a half.
And for those that are out there that are starting the grief journey, does it get better?
Yes, it gets different. The best would be to have David sitting here next to me saying, yeah, we put together this spoken word album of my experiences. That would be the best,
right?
But that's not going to be. So it gets different as time goes on. And I think probably one of the most profound things that I've read over the last 18 months has been a book by Martine Prechtel, and it's called The Smell of Rain and Dust, and it's Grief and Praise. Hmm. And what he says in there is that our grief is important because it is praising what we love.
Okay.
And
I've never quite thought of it that way. That does underscore what... Yeah, that's...
So we have to grieve because that's praising what we love. And out of that grief, as we begin to move forward in our lives, we have the opportunity to create something of beauty. And this was a way for me to create something of beauty, praising David and recognizing my own grief. So mm-hmm. That's a lot of what this album is praising David and grieving him at the same time.
Now, Stuck is told from your perspective. Did you write that?
I did.
That was a piece that you did?
Yes.
Inspired by David?
Inspired
by the grief.
My grieving experience,
okay.
Right. As I, you know, I sat there at the computer every day writing, much like David did, and going, oh, look, here I am again in this spot again.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. That's interesting. Here I am writing the same sort of thing again. So I got to a point where I recognized that much of my writing was repeating the same things in different words.
Right. So, and you had to lift the needle and move it on.
And I had to lift the needle and move on, yeah.
Wow. Again, we're going to have more spoken word albums forthcoming. When is the new music album?
The new music album is scheduled for the spring, and much like reflecting on this, as I said, the title of David's book was Messages from the Left Side of My Heart, New Beginnings. This is Messages for the Heart, and my new album, the working title, is From the Left Side. Okay. And so it will be in the spring, and I'm in the process of working on that right now.
Now, will it be a woman and her guitar? Will it be accompaniment? Will Jeff be a part of this or any of the other players we've mentioned?
Jeff will be a part of this, and how that's going to play in there yet has to be decided. Okay. You know, he's going to have to spend some time with the tracks that we've already done roughs on. As I said, John Carpenter is going to help me with production as well on this, but it will be me and guitar, and I'll be covering a Ken Yates tune as well. I've actually been in contact with Ken, and he's given his approval and listened to the rough and given his approval on that, which is pretty darn cool.
One thing I do have to mention, and that is when it comes to acoustic music, John Carpenter and Thunderclap is the place to go. There's a lot of wonderful studios out here, but when it comes to the acoustic artists, Sarver's albums, for instance, Eric Lambert's albums. When I first got to know John was through Eric Lambert's recordings.
Okay.
And I started saying, wow, this guy's really got his handle on the sound. And then I heard other stuff coming out of John's studio. And then most recently, when I was having Jeff on the show about a year or so ago with some of his projects, again, and then John would come in, you know, with the Nomad Planets. And I'm
right.
Like, this guy's got a feel for a certain kind of music that's, it's like he's always the fifth member of the band. You know, he is the George Martin of that style. Not to take anything away from other studios, but John is a great person creatively when it comes to artists like yourself.
Well, and I have to thank Jeff for introducing me to him, because although I knew his name and I knew of Thunderclap from years ago, and Mark Mybeck was actually a patient of mine when I was still working.
Oh, wow.
I had never actually met John or worked with him, but wow. Yeah, even just the roughs that we've got down, just amazing.
Will you be doing any more band-type albums like we opened up with I Don't Do Country? That was a full-on band project, even if it was session players. I could see you sitting in with the Nomad Planets.
Yeah.
And doing your music with them, as kind of like Dylan in the band.
That would be fun. Well, if John and Mark are up for it, you know.
I think that would be a nice scenario to see what could be created in that.
That would be fun. What? I would like that.
So,
and I do have a trio that I work with, but we're definitely folk trio out of Chicago, Song Sisters.
Let's play another one. I promised we would get to this, and we may try to get to another one, but it's getting close. This is the opening track, My Wish for You. And again, this is one of your favorites, you said.
Yes. Yes, because this is very reflective of what happened to David after the first heart attack and how he began to think about his life differently.
All right, let's listen to it. And again, you can get this at jazzdakini.com, and it's available for download all over the usual suspects.
My wish for you is that you make a huge mistake. A mistake so big that after that you will never be the same again. A mistake that will reveal all your lies and hypocrisy, your strategies for control and avoidance. So there is no way in hell that you can ever go back to being untrue. I want you to get caught being devious and mean, uncaring and abusive. I want you to stand your ground
Feel the shame. Be accountable. Take responsibility for the machinations of your ego. I want you to get busted as an ego, so that forever after you will only dare to live from your heart, from your honest truth. Revealed, repentant, transparent, unashamed. Then you will see. You are still loved. You are still safe. You are still worthy. And you can live a life that requires no more lies. I want you to authentically be who you have been pretending to be. Human and humane. A good and righteous person. Unafraid, innocent once again, with no more secrets to hide. Then I want you to come for dinner and stay too late talking with me about God. Inside each of us, so that all of our unnecessary suffering can finally come to an end.
My Wish for You, opening track, Schaffner Sarver Cowan.
Cowan.
Messages for the Heart is the album. It's spoken word with music, and that was one of the examples I was talking about with the Native American kind of feel to it.
That was an overtone flute that David created out of PVC pipe.
Beautiful. I can't believe that's PVC pipe.
It's true. I still have the pipe.
Wow.
And a pan drum, like a steel hong drum.
Okay. Now, do you play anything other than guitar?
Well, I can play a flute, but it's been a long time.
Okay.
And I can play around with a frame drum.
All right. We've got just a few minutes left. We're going to play, as we talk, an instrumental piece you wrote, which is actually taken from the title of David's book, Messages from the Left Side. It's your first instrumental.
It is my very first instrumental. It was always David that wrote instrumentals.
Did you write this planning it to be an instrumental, or was this supposed to be a song?
No, it was an instrumental. It just happened, and it happened after he died, within probably, a few weeks of his death, I was playing around with the guitar, and it just happened. I don't know how else to explain it.
Wow. And that's going to be the title, you said, of the next album?
The next album is going to be From the Left Side.
From the Left Side.
Yeah, so we're building on...
From the left side. The right side is left behind.
David actually had a theory about the left side, that's where the emotions are stored. That's where the consciousness is stored, and so that's why he used the left side.
Okay. This is beautiful.
Thank you. I'm really happy with it. I'm very pleased about the way that it turned out, and I'm so grateful to Jeff and to Mike Gallimore and to William Day and to Ty and Kai for putting together the music that underscores this.
It's the age of COVID. You release a new album. How are you marketing this? And do you hold ambitions and hopes that perhaps you and Jeff can go on stage and do, whether it's poetry slams or acoustic performances together, and bring some of this to the live concert stage?
We've actually talked about that. And of course, in the time of COVID, we can't actually do live performances right now, but mm-hmm. we have considered that as a possibility. How I marketed it, I actually started out with just a digital distribution because that seemed like the fastest way to get it out there. I've been fortunate that Lily Kuzma from the Folk Festival at WDCB has played a number of the tracks on her Folk Festival shows and will continue to do so. She said people have had very positive feedback on her throwing spoken word pieces into her show.
Mm-hmm. And, I like the idea of doing that. I may steal that idea a little bit here and there too, because some of this is powerful. Some of this is stuff you have to hear. I mean, people need to hear certain words of inspiration, desperation perhaps, because we're so desperate to move on, and we're not. We're standing in place. We're stuck, to use
we're
your
stuck.
Word. I look forward to hearing more of David's work, especially the nursing stories, the stories of the people he touched and touched him.
Yeah, they're very powerful, and I'm in the process of transcribing those now.
So you have a whole lot of work in front of you. Your album, more David albums.
Book.
A book.
Yeah. Yeah, because he had started a second book, so I'm going to combine the nursing stories in that second book, as well as perhaps use some of those in the spoken word.
It seems like you found a perfect partner for this in Jeff Sarver, too.
Oh, absolutely. It's a beautiful collaboration, and I'm very grateful
for
it.
You're on the perfect wavelength together.
Yeah, we are.
Kindred souls, so to speak. I don't know where to go from here. I mean, it's just... Here comes is it the storm coming in?
Oh, the waves.
The waves.
The waves. David was born in California.
I knew it was coming. There it is. Listen to it. So you can get this on your website. Where else can you get this?
You can get it from YouTube Music. You can get it from Spotify. You can get it from Amazon.
The full album?
iMusic, yes. Also, for a more direct way to pay Jeff and I, if you go to pattyschaffner.bandcamp.com, they are really excellent. And the first Friday of every month, they are... everything that they take in for an album goes directly to the artist.
Excellent.
which is really cool. So their payout is really quick. So there's lots of sources. If you're a Spotify person, you can go to Spotify. But if you really want to support the local artists, myself included, Bandcamp is the way to go. And sooner or later, I'll get Jeff hooked up with a Bandcamp account.
Okay. Kicking and screaming, I'm sure.
Kicking and screaming all the way, which is why we have a physical album of this instead of just a digital.
I'm glad. I'm surprised he didn't push you for vinyl.
Well, you know, he was talking about that.
It's back, I'm telling you. The Bukowski album that just came out, I sold out on.
Really?
People actually bought it.
Well, I have a grandson who just turned 15 who is very much into vinyl, and I just turned him on to Pat Metheny.
Oh,
and
very good.
So, you know, I gave him a list of guitarists since he aspires to play guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And said, okay, you want to listen to Lionel Luecke and Kenny Burrell, and I want you to listen to Pat Metheny and Joe Pass.
Let's not forget Wes Montgomery.
Wes Montgomery was on the list as well,
yeah.
And I said, here, give a listen to these. He went, ooh, I really like Metheny. I said, okay, I'll see if I can find you a Metheny vinyl album.
I had some. I don't know if I still do. Give me a call.
If you do, let me know, because he just got his second turntable.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you, Patty, for coming out. We certainly appreciate having you here and sharing this with us and bearing your soul as well as David's.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it very, very much.
It's a pleasure talking to you.
More than I can say.
A pleasure listening to this. Again, we just touched on the tip of the iceberg with this. It's 14 tracks. You've only heard three. Well, four if you count the instrumental. And you need to hear this, folks. It's something that will touch your soul and touch your heart. And it might change your life.
And the piece No Words, by the way, actually is great meditation music. So if you're thinking, wow, I want to do some yoga to something really cool and backgroundy, that would be the track No Words to.
So there's your Down Dog soundtrack.
Exactly.
That's the only yoga move I know. My wife was doing that one time, Down Dog. I'm like, what? It's like, look at the position. Okay, I get it. We're going to leave you with something earlier from Patty's career. This is 2014.
Correct.
Yeah, this one actually made my my top 10 in the Times, if I recall.
Yay, yes, I believe it did.
What You Gonna Do is the name of the song, and this is more of a bluesy style. We heard your neo-country Americana to open the show. We've heard your spoken word in between. And these albums are all still available?
Those are, and they are available also digitally, but you can also contact me if you want a physical copy.
All right. Let's listen to it. This is What You're Gonna Do. Patty Schaffner is our guest today, and thank you.
Mahalo, as we say in Hawaii.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Stick around. We've got Lauren Dukes, a show I did about 2 weeks ago when she was in studio. And we're going to feature that next, coming up after this.
What you gonna do? You don't get your way.
Your heart.